Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
And our producer extraordinaire, Mr. Bryce Neshcom Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
So I got an email from a kid I've been talking to off and on for years. He's a magician, and his name's Justin, coincidentally. And he'd asked me some advice about he and his buddy were looking to start a business, and they wanted to start a business selling basically playing cards, puzzles, and other kind of stuff like that. Kind of, you know, because these are areas of interest for him, and they're looking to do something like this.
Magic adjacent sort of?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
And I said, you know, my response was, I said, hey, this would be a great question for my After Things podcast with Brian Brushwood and Justin Young. Mind if we talk about it next week? And he was like, cool about it. And I said, Brian owns scamscuff.com and would have some ideas about making your shop unique.
You should get
scam
scuff.
My quick answer
too.
Is that this is a really, really hard business to make a profit. The biggest challenge is coming up with enough exclusivities to differentiate yourself from the hundreds of other people that are doing the same thing. And so I said, I just gave him general advice that if you want to start a business, I suggest you dive deep into what problems you can solve for other people, then look for overlap with your skills and interests. So
solid broad strokes advice.
Yeah.
From the get go. Brian, if, you had someone who was asking your advice to get
about making a store, yeah,
a magic adjacent store,
a magic adjacent store with puzzles and cards and custom stuff.
What would you know about that?
Here's what I know is that scam stuff may or may not be able to compete in an efficient market, but luckily. Scam stuff is an evolution of a personality-driven platform in Scam School and the Modern Rogue. And as such, we project onto all of the stuff. There are three types of things that we have in the Scam Stuff store. Some of them are puzzle boxes. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn when I say that the person that we work with the puzzle boxes sends us blank puzzle boxes. And then we sit and come up with a story behind everything. For example, the Outlaws Vault. Outlaws is a custom deck of cards that has a story behind it. And so the Outlaws Vault is a puzzle box that allows you to get in there and get a couple of decks of cards and a challenge coin. In the real world, what's that worth? I don't know. Let's reduce it to its core elements.
Wood and cards.
Yeah, some wood, maybe what, $5 of wood.
A seed will get you all the wood.
You know, $7 of paper, you know, right. and a coin, right? And yet we have it and sell it at $150. And the only way you're able to pull that off is if what you're really selling is not the puzzle box itself, but instead
Let me just clarify something. These are limited manufacturer items, folks. So it's not like Brian's like paying $6 for this thing.
Oh, no.
I want to make that clear.
Yeah, no. They cost a lot of time goes into the manufacture
of these puzzle boxes.
But the only way to get anywhere is if what you're really selling is the experience, right? If what you're really selling is one of my favorite reframes of the Outlaw's Vault was when somebody called it an escape room in reverse, where it's like you are buying an experience. It is a 30 to 40 minute experience. And at the end, you will have unlocked it and solved the mystery. And your reward will be that there's stuff inside for you. But what you're really doing is you're selling that experience and some keepsakes that go along with it. Now, this is the first year. Spoiler alert, we are going to do another puzzle box this year. Yeah, no, nobody saw it coming. This will be the first year that we intentionally are designing the puzzle box with the possibility of somebody never having heard of Brian Brushwood, never having seen Scam School, never having anything, could somebody be handed this and still have a fulfilling and exciting journey to go through with it? And I think we've done a really, really good job of that. We'll find out whenever it gets released between now and Cyber Monday. I would say that it's very tempting to believe in this business that the star of the show is the cards themselves, or that the star of the show is the puzzle boxes, or that the star of the show is the actual things you're selling. I would say whatever success Scam Stuff has had has been remembering that what you're really selling is the confidence that comes from knowing that there's a story. Story matters. The confidence that comes from wearing a ring that has a magic escape shim in there matters. The confidence that comes when you have a magic wallet on you at all times and you know that you can entertain the entire room matters. It's the feelings are what you're selling, and that's the only way to do it where you don't get just crushed by a cold evaluation of what were the materials that went into this, how much could they possibly cost, why on earth would I pay five times the material cost that goes in there. For example, you sell books, Andrew. Theoretically, you could say, what is this? It's a bunch of squished wood pulp. What does that cost? Like $7 to get printed? Why
on earth? Mostly e-books, Brian. It's nothing.
Right, exactly, right? But you write a story. And even then, it's like, okay, so you wrote a bunch of words. You want me to give you $10 on Kindle Store for that? Oh. It's like, no. What I want to give you is an exciting, awesome day hanging out on a hammock and entertaining yourself with an amazingly well-thought-out story, right? What are you really selling? It's not the words, it's not the paper, it's not the book, it's the story. And it's not even the story, it's the experience you have of when you encounter a really good story.
Sure, and I would say that's the product side. And I'm going to say that, you know, my advice to this, Justin, though, is like, it's assuming you have great product. I have a friend that has a card company, make great cards. They've made some great, great playing cards. Nobody has ever heard of them because tons of people make playing cards. Tons of people make good cards. A few people know, go to this manufacturer. This is how you have them made. And now where there's a lot of great playing cards out there you'll never hear of. There's tons that, you know, iTrix, it got kind of boring because all we did every week was cover somebody's new Kickstarter launch for their own line of playing cards. And I saw some great ones. And the ones that stuck around had a great design. And then I know people who you go like, oh man, this is, I used their cards. I'm like, yeah, this guy still hasn't broken even yet. Like, what? I'm like, yeah, this guy, your cards you use because to keep the interest, they had to keep coming up with new versions of the decks and buy really huge runs and stuff. And it is a hobby. It is very hobby. And there are people who have done well by it, you know, but it's not this cash grab that people think that it is. And I know way more people that have lost money making good cards than have made money doing them. And if you want to get into a business and say, hey, I'm going to do this, you know, Brian touched on this briefly at the beginning. Brian has a huge millions plus subscriber audience of people who watch him every week and watch his shows. And he's like, how do I capitalize on this? How do I use this to my advantage? And he's like, why don't I sell products? Maybe at the urging of his friends. And Brian decided to create a store because a lot of people look to me for cool stuff, cool videos. If a small percentage of them, of a fraction of a percent, will then go over and go to my store and buy something, that works out really well. But you had that huge YouTube audience before you had this. And so if I was nobody and I wanted to start my own store right now, man, it's such a crowded space with people willing to lose money over it. Doesn't mean it can't be done, but you've got to be willing to put in the effort. Like we would go see like Dan and Dave, you know, who amazing cardists. Then you'd go look at what they did at conventions when they would, you know, very rarely do appearances, but when they would do that, they would put out, you know, amazing displays with like that didn't, it felt like showrooms and not crappy magic booths. When they would do their own magic cons and stuff, extremely well put on, huge, you know, hundreds of kids would show up to go to this thing. They had that audience. They had a huge audience that they could drive towards it. I don't know of, you know, in the last 10 years, I cannot name a new magic company other than like scam stuff that's really taken off and succeeded. I'm sure there may have been, but and to do one without that, what's driving people to the site thing, it's hard.
And even then, the ones that really stood out in the aughts that really distinguished themselves were like Penguin Illusionist and Theory 11 and Dan and Dave. They all had forums. They were all already gathering places for young magicians. And it was very important that they had those forums because that's what kept people there. And so you were able to directly market to them. There has always been something that kind of brings people there. And it was one of the things that I think, you know, we... With iTrix had to make a decision where at a certain point when we had the audience, it was like, well, do we want to be an advertising company or do we want to be a merchandising company? And we decided to be an advertising company because it was a lot easier than being a merchandising company because it would mean developing a whole other skill set. But there is a reason why people would suggest that to us because we had the thing that was hard to get, which is the lore out front that you know, because you're right. A million different people can put out a million different cards. And specifically now, the real money is not in making the product. The money is in being the source. And being the source is really, really important. I mean, and for scam stuff, it's like, hey, look, we want you theoretically to a regular buying pattern for magicians and collectors is buy maybe one or two decks a year that look really cool. And then a big thing around Christmas for either yourself or people know that you like and they want to buy you. And that's the money. The money is in that relationship playing out over 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. That's where you really make the money.
Yeah. The oh, man, so many different directions that we could take this. If I was going to give advice, just like I mentioned, that what is it you're really selling? You're not selling, you know, pulp crushed into paper. You're selling a story. You're selling in the experience of sitting in the sun and reading a good novel. Likewise, figure out what is it you want. Do you love the idea of a brand that everybody respects as having the best puzzle boxes? Or do you love the experience of designing very clever puzzle boxes and decks of cards and so on? If it's the latter, then consider partnering with someone, including scamstuff.com, or if not scamstuff.com, then a competitor to scamstuff.com. Find somebody who has a platform for who might be interested in expanding out their own line of competing things. And you could be the person behind the curtain that does all that stuff. But whatever it is, let's say you wanted to duplicate exactly Scamstuff, right? Step one, you would have to design all the things. Step two, you'd have to raise the capital to make all of the things. Step three, you'd have to build the infrastructure to fulfill all of the things. Step four, so let's say you've done all of that and you have a functioning store. Now comes the question of how do I get attention and eyeballs and get everybody excited about these things? And in the case of scam stuff, it was because I happen to have step four already handled. I already had the eyeballs. I just had to figure out what to do with it. So I had to learn all those other things. But if what you want to do is just make a thing, consider the possibility that there's somebody out there that already has all the eyeballs and doesn't mind, you know, would love their logo to be stamped on it. You could be the person who made the things and they'll be happy to pay you for it. But then again, you're in a commodity space because they're happy to pay for it to the extent that you are more affordable and higher quality than all of the competition out there. So,
I think that I keep thinking about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember when this person told me they wanted to do vaguely this idea. I'm like, well, how are you going to be different? Like, oh, I'm going to have really good selection. Well, the internet gives you everything. That's doesn't mean anything, like, you know, and people hear about, you know, they're I used to work with one magic retailer online a lot because I said, you know, I'll give them an exclusive for a short period of time because I knew if they put it out on their email, it was better than advertising. Everybody knew that it was out there, you know, and people will find a place to buy it. And so it's, you know, the fantasy is, you know, they see illusionist things like this and I want to build this thing, but you've got to, like, in any origin story, you need to really understand, you know, illusionist started because it was Brad Christian looked at the popularity of David Blaine and said, there are a lot of people that want to learn street magic. Street magic's big and there's an audience that would never think of going to a magic shop. So he produced an amazing, well-produced video series, DVD series on street magic. And then he bought commercial time on cable television that would air whenever the David Blaine specials were rerun and built his business that he paid for TV advertising to sell magic, which sounds insane. But Illusionist, because of that, became big. And then all of a sudden they kind of think maybe because of Jonathan Bame, you know, they realized, you know, hey, trick, you know, excuse me, like non-trick decks, but just designer decks are actually a big thing. And that became a big thing. And then Bame left Illusionist and started Theory 11. And with that, he had a lot of insider respect. Bame had a relationship with Danny Garcia and other creators and had business knew how to do this and was able to, you know, people like Chris Kenner backing him. He was able to go start, you know, he had all the insiders on his side, you know, and he had that to launch that. And that's where Illusionist came about. Penguin is these guys understood the Amazon model. You put your distribution center near where you're buying the warehouse that's selling you the stuff. So you save on this. They're able to do, like, you know, same day shipping, things like this, because they were playing a totally different game.
Well, somebody had that idea. How are we going to win on selection? And Penguin won making that play 15 years ago where they figured out, hey, look, who's the largest distributor? We found the largest distributor of magic, and we're going to put our warehouse right next to their warehouse. And every day we're going to go buy, we're going to list everything they have in their shop, everything that they have available. Congratulations. Now every magic trick ever that would ever be released is in our store. We're going to cultivate a mailing list and availability.
And hit you every week with the, like, build up that email list. Like, they have, I suspect, the largest email list in magic. And I don't know how they built that up. I know that there are a lot of early days sort of optimization methods that you can't do anymore that, you know, had I been in that business, I certainly probably would have done. And they built up a huge, probably 250,000, you know, name list. I'm only guessing at that, which was great. And so they have this advantage and they became kind of almost the Amazon of magic in a sense. And by modeling a lot of things that they did, and the idea of, like, yeah, put our warehouse next to the distributor.
Which, by the way, the existence of that, the fact that they are, let's just for sake of discussion, call Penguin, you know, the Amazon of magic, that limits the moves that an upstart like Scam Stuff could come from. Even mm-hmm. having the benefit of reaching millions of people month after month after month, we have to tell a different story, especially since you can see an item on Scam Stuff, search for it on literal Amazon or the Amazon of Magic Penguin and find it somewhere else, which means everything we do on Scam Stuff has to be uniquely its own. There are a few commodity items on there. We make virtually no money. It's almost not worth it to have it. We like having it in there because it fills out the lifestyle that we're trying to project. But unless it's an original, those are the only things we can have anything close to a comfortable margin on.
So the answer is, if you're passionate and anything's appeal to you, do it, but understand how other businesses succeed. Understand, don't look at the website, don't look at the outside and go, that's it. And I've had conversations with a lot of people in magic trying to explain, and 2 or 3 years later I talk to them, like, they're like, oh yeah, this, and I don't do I told you so's, but it's like, You didn't do your research. You know, like, I'm going to open up a restaurant. You know, 90% of them fail. You didn't know that? You should have known that, because, you know, so.
Well, you know, I think there's a real seductive idea that when you look at building your own thing, you look at the players now and you fixate on their inefficiencies, their very superficial inefficiencies, like at this stage. Like, you look at YouTube and you're like, oh, well, they suppress free speech and they have a weird algorithm and they have all this. And look, it's not that those things aren't true. They probably are. And in that case, in the case of YouTube, absolutely they are. But you're dealing with, they're at level 157, right? Like, these are problems that are being caused by their compounding success. When it's like, when you want to build something, man, you better understand how they got from level zero to level 157 before you start counter-programming and not assuming like, oh, no, what people want is the unfettered thing. Sometimes that works if all the math works out, but a lot of times that's where you get bad ideas because you're just looking at a very specific moment in time for an established brand that you're coming way late to the game, and you're spending a lot more time thinking about where they made a mistake or where they are not delivering a pleasurable experience compared to what works. Why are they here? Why do I know their name? Why are they a ubiquitous brand?
This goes back to the question of like what is it you really want? Is what you want to create a famous brand, or is what you want to be the genius behind clever puzzle boxes? If that's the case, in the short term, figure out somebody who has a need for puzzle boxes or decks of cards or whatever it is you want to design and say, hey, I'm pretty good at it. Look at these different options. Will this fit into your stuff? I am flexible on these things, the amount of money that I'm going to get paid, the speed at which you want changes made, whether or not my name is associated with it anywhere. There are different types of currency, and you might be able to partner up with somebody, including scamstuff.com. Again, I can't say this enough. Brian at Schwood.com. That's my email. If you have something that plugs into an unmet need of an established platform, then maybe that's a good way to get started so that you build the experience, you build the contacts, you understand how that process goes, and then there'll be a time where you'll be able to go independent. We just did a whole talk at TwitchCon in which we very candidly said one of the most important things that we did was spend a half decade in the salt mines of working for a network for very little pay, because it put us, Justin and I, in a position when we went independent to understand the way the business works, to understand the machinery of what made for a good show. I don't know that trial and error would have been, in an alternate timeline, the better way for us to have found all that stuff out. I'm very grateful for the fact that we were able to plug in and satisfy somebody else's need for more shows and more ad space to sell a bunch of stuff. And we're extremely grateful for the experience that we got out of having done that.
I think that if you're looking to do a thing, you know, and you have to understand what it's like, ask yourself, what am I really trying to do? And then analyze something else and do that. Why does this work? And there's an expression in startups, they talk about you have to be 10x better, which is an arbitrary number to say we're 10x better. But it means Google Plus failed for a lot of reasons. Google Plus failed. One of the primary reasons was that Facebook was, hey, we already have an invasive, social network in our lives. Google Plus had some little, you know, we have these things, circles, and we have this because there are problems with Facebook, but their solutions to those problems weren't compelling enough to deal with the problem of everybody I know is over here. And Google, I have two stupid YouTube accounts with my same name because Google Plus said, hey, you've got to create this new account, I think, so they could do some BS growth things, to be honest with you. I think it was BS. So I have like part of my audience here, part of there, because I had to create some things. They did all these things to try to get everybody over to Google Plus, to try to get them to do this. This is the most successful marketing company in the history of the planet, was afraid of Facebook and tried to come up with a competing product and failed. And finally, this last week or so, they're finally announcing that they're like pulling sort of the Google Plus integrations out of there, because there wasn't a compelling reason in any business you get into. And it's, if you want to get in, like I said, if you want to get into the magic, selling magic business, if you didn't know why Penguin was successful because of this, or you didn't realize why Scam School is what it is because of this, you got to do your homework and understand, not find the narrative that makes you, that suits you, you know, that appeals to you. Find the real story. And origin stories are usually a lie. The story we say about how we got successful, we often don't know. And you've got to figure out, like, no, like, how is this really better? Amazon was like, put the warehouse, the distribution center next to the warehouse owned by somebody else. We don't pay for inventory. Boom, we can have huge inventory without overhead. Two, we solved shipping. Those differences meant the world. They could offer every book in the world, and then they could say they could cut their shipping costs to fractions. So
100%. And you know, I think with Brian and Scam Stuff, it's like the baseboards are YouTube plus mailing list. Those are the ingredients, right? Like that's how you get stuff out. And then it's execution. And you need to know all those parts, and you need to have all those parts. And you know, ultimately, why did Google Plus fail? Because the real problem they were trying to solve was Facebook won't let us index their web pages. And so therefore we're losing out on data. So we need to solve that problem. Here's this thing. It wasn't really user problems. It wasn't like, oh, this is great. Like all the people I knew that stuck with Google Plus were just friends like Brian who got into the algorithm,
the recommended feed, incentivizing
people to stay there because of the numbers. The only good product that came out of Google Plus was Hangouts, and we knew it from the moment that it was announced.
Always remember that the reason, despite noises that were made at the time of implementation, there is absolutely no doubt that the YouTube comment system is superior now that it is exactly Google Plus's system. At the time, everybody went nuts.
They made two things.
And
they were both used better in other places.
Right, correct, correct.
You know, they had a good comment threading, which is what YouTube's comments are now based on, and they have Hangouts, which should have always been its own thing. And if they would have put as much time and effort into figuring out a better way to utilize Hangouts, as opposed to thinking of it as a fin on the side of this monstrosity that was Google Plus, they probably would have had a better, more enduring social network.
Yeah. You know, solve another problem. But you know, the problem they had was Facebook's making money. We want that money. You know, I want to make that money they're making, and I'm going to do the same thing they're doing. Well, doesn't work like that. So, but there's a lot of opportunities out there. There's a lot of friction. We talk about this a lot, the lot of friction. You know, we do, the reason we're able to do the Weird Things podcast is because there's a producer here, Bryce, which, you know, your support for this show and After Things is, you know, enables us to have somebody, you know, a grown-up come in and make sure that things get sent, you know, that the product gets delivered, it gets produced and done that. There are not enough prices in the world. There are not enough people who produce and facilitate and make these things happen. I've had a lot of projects that like don't go anywhere where I have content or the ability to do this, but I need somebody else who's there to say, hey, I will go through the checklist and get these things done. And it's hard. It is hard to find competent people. And then we said there are a lot of people who want to do things. Very few people who will deliver and not get bored or walk away from things. And that's, you know, there is ample opportunity out there, you know. And so you just got to want to do the hard thing. Thank you, Bryce.
By the way, feel free, person. Who is this again?
Justin.
Justin.
Not this Justin, the other Justin.
Well, that's the awkward
email
thing.
Justin. Feel free to email me, brian@schwood.com, if you have ideas.
Any picks?
Picks. My pick is TwitchCon. If you haven't been, you should go.
You should have gone.
You should have gone last week. No, it was really fascinating. What an eye-opening experience. I'm going to guess that next year will not be substantially different from this year, insofar as I'm going to bet that if you want to see what it's like for an industry to get born and have its sea legs, if you want to hop into a time traveling machine and watch the beginning of YouTube all over again, go to TwitchCon. Like, everybody's figuring stuff out. And for the moment, everybody's super cool and happy to talk to you about what parts they've figured out and what parts they're figuring out. And that's a special thing. It was really, really great to have that experience.
Well, and that's like your whole deal. We like went on the expo floor and you started giving business consultation to like
just for free.
Like literally. Suddenly, anyway.
Yeah. 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 Including to scam artists on the street, which we'll talk about tomorrow night.
Let me interject here, too, because, like, you know, when YouTube had a huge rise in its ascendance and YouTube became this big platform, there was this other efforts for people to try to create versions of that or try to replicate it or something like that. And that's the hard part because one, YouTube's already YouTube. That's where you go. Two, YouTube's backed by Google. So YouTube can have kind of unlimited sort of bandwidth and you don't really know what the costs are. Justin.tv was one of these companies in a space trying to say, hey, you know, there's this other form of video live streaming and interactivity that's neat. And this is, there's a value here. And then as people started to do stream video game playing and this sort of stuff, there it carved out a different niche that YouTube wasn't really easily set up to do. And then, you know, you get now Twitch, which is now an Amazon company, and Twitch is like, yeah, no, there's this really cool space that we can solve this problem because YouTube isn't solving that problem in a really useful way right now. And that's yeah, like as Brian said, you're watching a new thing emerge. You know, we've gone through YouTube really, really, it's like it's, you know, it's run by a bunch of freaking marketing, you know, or, you know, middle management people like, this is what a show is. You need to, you know, put two shows up every week. You need to do this, you need to do a channel. Like these things change. These things change over time. And to play that YouTube game can be frustrating. And then here's this other thing that's like, maybe it's live streaming, maybe it's this, and let's be more flexible about what it means how to be successful here. So,
yeah,
100%. And what Twitch kind of fell into, and I think through trial and error, was that when we were on it back when it was Justin TV, it was a fairly indistinguishable service from Ustream and Meta Cafe and everything else that we used.
Daily Motion. Meta Cafe was a curated YouTube competitor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You know, there was a moment where, for a couple reasons, not the least of which was that, much like YouTube, Justin TV was also a haven for piracy. Did they realize? Oh, wait. The places where we're getting really high numbers that aren't piracy are video games. As long as we can understand reasonably that video game companies are not going to raise a stink about people playing their video games live on the internet, then now we can draw that line. And it's part of the reason why Brian and I got, you know, we were no longer welcome doing live stuff, was because that was where they could know for sure, all right, either you're playing a video game or you're not. And that's what we are. This is what the community is. And now let's figure out building, and this is where they always have won, is they figured out chat, they figured out emotes, they figured out a way for streamers to get paid in a way that benefits them. Like, that's crucial. And it's just now kind of multiplying and exploding.
What is really exciting about all of the live streaming stuff is that it is kind of going through the same motions as digital cinematography did about 10 years ago in terms of like hardware and software becoming more prevalent, cheaper, easier, lots of free, way more free alternatives for live streaming than cinematography. Opening up access to so many people means that, yes, there will be a lot of people who, you know, are trying to ape someone else, and there will also be people trying to do something new and people trying to do nothing and make old stuff and bring in new stuff. Like the explosion that the accessibility of digital filmmaking equipment created in entertainment en masse is the same sort of catalyst we're looking at now with live streaming and outside of games, not just games. And I think that's really... That's a really exciting thing to look forward to.
Also, right now, everyone's famous and no one's famous. Mm-hmm. Like, it was really kind of cool just walking around, you're talking to people, and it's like, you know, they're also partners, and everybody streams. That's the other thing, is that the audience, everyone's a creator. Mm-hmm. Every person who watches is not just a viewer. Like, they're also doing it, and they also want to talk about that, and some of them are gigantic, and some of them aren't. But, yeah, everyone's famous and no one's famous, except for Ninja. He's really famous because he has a bus.
Hey, his underwear line that he was selling catty corner to the convention was pretty ugly too.
Wait, really?
I didn't think so. It was blue and yellow.
Well, we don't have to be
also
catty.
His theme song, you know,
we don't need to get into that either.
It's for every reason that Brian said, my pick was TwitchCon. You can watch Shoot. You should probably have a place where people could easily see.
They can easily see it on the Night Attack feed next week, probably.
Oh, oh great. No. Yeah.
Next week.
Yeah, it'll be on the Night Attack feed, the talk we did together, and then I did another talk. That was really fun. And just in general, what a fun experience, and just meeting so many rad folks. It's hard for us hermits. You know, we've lived on our craggy soil for so long, apart from the world, that now, like, meeting all these people, it really kind of made me excited to kind of collaborate and do more stuff together.
I have a pick for other things. So over the past couple of days, Netflix dropped a new season of their Castlevania adaptation. And boy, howdy, is this show going places. So I talked about season one a little bit and how the first episode of season one kind of does a weird thing of making Dracula, the main villain of this big demonic war, seem so empathetic. Like, you watch the first episode and you think, oh, yeah, you know what? We should probably just destroy humanity because this is a bad place. And season two, which just came out, is almost like becoming Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Like, there becomes this big focus on the fact that this is a war, right? This is Dracula and the armies of the undead fighting humanity, and that doesn't just happen overnight. You have to have an actual war, and you have to have leaders and generals, and there becomes drama of that, and it's really something interesting to see. Man, y'all should check out Castlevania on Netflix. Y'all should check it out.
Castlevania.
It's a very quick watch too.
Nice.
So.
My pick is Matthew Reinhardt has a new pop-up book out, and this is by
The Nightmare Before Christmas. Okay, you want to show us a little bit of that?
Yeah, I'll show you a quick. It has, you know, again, some, and like the Reinhardt, like we open it up and we're looking at the big house, and Reinhardt does these really cool compound.
Oh yeah, is ones, like the mayor's house. Oh yeah, there's Jack Skellington. Look at him.
He pops up out of it. I mean, really cool. I'll show you. Some neat ones, but one of my favorite ones of all is this.
Okay, so there's Santa. I'm trying to see. Oh, that's like the Christmas version of Halloween Town, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's cute. That's really well made.
Look at this thing. How much just
it's tall. It's like 2 or 3 feet tall, at least.
I mean, it's impressive. But anyhow, you know, Reinhardt's pop-ups just like explode out of the page. So, really, really, really incredible.
So, like, for something like that, or you showed us the Harry Potter one on Weird Things, where does he source the art and illustrations for those? Are those original illustrations, or does he team up with the studios?
Yeah, the studios. I mean, like this pop-up, this one is... Reinhardt is the one who did the paper design and whatnot. As far as the artwork and all this, you know, I don't know, you know, it's all sort of art that sort of exists in that world. So as far as who supplied it, I don't know if he's just working from, like, you know, assets that they have, they allow him to use whatever.
Yeah.
The Harry Potter one.
This was
illustrated, the Harry Potter illustrated by Kevin M. Wilson. So Kevin M. Wilson did the illustrations for it. So it's clearly there. The other one looks like it was, you know, may have just existing assets, but this is Kevin Wilson's the one that figured out
the, you know, 3D. All that. Yeah. So, that's awesome, man. And it looks like they open and close easily. Like that's a tough thing for pop-up is to like get everything open and not crush it when you close it.
Yeah. I mean, Reinhardt is, you know, I've got hundreds of pop-up books and I've looked at, you know, over the years, the evolution of this, and I get some of the new ones that come out by other, they're just not good. They're just generally not that good because you get somebody who's like a graphic designer. It's like, oh, I'll do pop-ups. And then they don't really know. They don't have the experience like of one going through, you can make a pop-up. One, to know how to make an intricate pop-up that supports itself and gets bigger and bigger is hard. And Reinhardt's improved upon this, built things I've not seen anywhere else. Two, to know how it could be manufactured, and three, work when somebody opens this up. I've seen pop-up books like, man, this just doesn't work because they got cheap on the paper or they didn't know what they're doing.
So. Yeah. This looks great, man.
Yep.
Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. The illustrations on it is just fantastic. It's just great. Yeah.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.